The MCAT Podcast, session number 179. A collaboration between the medical school headquarters and Next Step Test Prep, the MCAT Podcast is here to make sure you have the information you need to succeed on your MCAT test day. We all know that the MCAT is one of the biggest hurdles you'll face as a pre-med, and we're here to give you the motivation and information that you need to know to help get you the score you deserve so you can one day call yourself a physician. Welcome to the MCAT Podcast. My name is Dr. Ryan Gurry, your host here every week. And this week I am joined by none other than Phil from Next Step Test Prep, or Blueprint MCAT. We're in the middle of a name change at Next Step into Blueprint, or they are in the middle of a name change. And so we're going to start mentioning Blueprint MCAT moving forward a lot more. Go check them out. NextStepTestPrep.com is still the website that you can go to, and you'll be redirected as appropriate in the future. So with that said, this is a great episode that I know will help a lot of you. A lot of you have the question about building a study plan for your MCAT. And no matter where you are in the process in terms of when your MCAT test date is, what you're doing besides studying for the MCAT, whether you're working or volunteering a ton or still taking classes, we will hopefully have a conversation today that will help you figure out how to create a study plan that will work for you. So let's go and jump in, say hello to Phil, and go from there. Phil, back for some more MCAT podcast. Now that we are psych-soshed out, let's dive into something that comes up all the time. I see it all the time in our Facebook group, on social media, and that involves, how the heck do I create a study plan? Right, students are so concerned, rightfully so, about, right, there's a million books to buy, there's all these courses, what do I need, AAMC material, UWorld, Next Step, there's just like so much out there. How do I, in the amount of time that I have, figure out what to do to maximize my score?
Yeah, well, the scope is monstrous when you look at what's going on with the MCAT. Right. I mean, it's like so amazingly large that, you know, your like strategies for like studying for, you know, a physics exam are like, you know, okay, it's over these three chapters. I'll just like read through those three chapters, do the homework for those three chapters, and I'm done. You can kind of like cram it a little bit. And I'm not saying you should be cramming for your classes, but you can a little bit. But with the MCAT, it's very different because you have to start like months in advance, and knowing like where to start and how to keep this going, there's definitely something like overwhelming about this. You know, it's everything from fluid dynamics to Kohlberg stages of moral reasoning to like endocrinology and nephrology. And so a study plan is really important because not just like the MCAT is not just content. A lot of it is this application side as well. And so figuring out how to work in like time for the content and how to space out the content. Should I hit all physics at first and then just kind of like work through stuff? Or, you know, like even beyond all the content stuff, there's also, you know, like taking exams, figuring out timing and endurance and stamina, like how to do the data interpretation, like little shortcuts for the math, and starting to notice the trends on how the AAMC is like encouraging you to think through this. So not just the content overall. And it does get overwhelming, especially when, you know, you have, you know, classes or kids or friends or family, or like, you know, you're a real human with other stuff going on. And so like actually accomplishing the stuff that you need to accomplish for the MCAT is already a pretty monstrous task. And so figuring out how to schedule this is definitely something you want to kind of think about. I know we're also in this time of the year when there's a lot of students starting to think about planning for like summer exams. And so I'm starting to kind of like see a lot of students that actually are asking me the same thing you are, which is like, okay, how do I set up my like study plan going through here? Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of things that I like big picture. First off, you're going to have to mix up content and like application practice. It's not going to be like a perfect 50-50 sort of thing. A lot of times students want to do the content first, master all the content, and then take practice exams. And that is not a good strategy for a couple of reasons. First off, the way that the exam is going to be testing you on stuff, that should be influencing how you're studying. And so you want to be thinking like like, how is the MCAT going to be testing organic chemistry? If I don't do any practice stuff, then I'm going to assume that it's tested the same way it's tested in undergrad, which it is completely different.
Well, let me give a good analogy that just popped into my head as you were saying it, because as a baseball player, right, if I were to do quote unquote content first and then do the practice test, that would be like me only hitting off of a tee forever and then going, okay, I'm ready to hit the 90 mile an hour fastball. I'm like, well, maybe I should have been taking some live pitches before getting close to the game.
Or even more, just you've been going to the gym for 6 months and like not even like close to like baseball, like swinging an actual bat, right? Yeah. Like if you like lift weights for 6 months without touching a bat, you're not going to be a great baseball player once you actually start.
Yep.
And so that's one thing. I do think it is important to start a little bit heavier on the content and a little, you know, kind of like gradually like shift. It's more of a gradient thing. Mm-hmm. But I would say like always start with some form of a diagnostic. Start with something. And we have a lot of students that say like, I feel like I shouldn't take the diagnostic. I haven't studied anything. It's been a long time. But the diagnostic is going to help you understand how the MCAT is going to test this material. Yeah. It's going to, that should inform and change the way that you're studying. So another thing, so like as you're going along, kind of like starting at the beginning, it's going to like take a diagnostic, spend like the first, you know, like 25%, 30% of your time doing mostly content, take your first exam there, you know, another like 10, 15, 20% of your time, and then take another exam. And then you start to like doing exams more and more frequently as you go along. Yeah. And then when you get to the tail end, you're not done with content, right?
Like you've never done with content.
No. Every student I've ever had is like, oh, I wish I had like four more days. I'd study so much. I'd learn so much more.
And that's part of the problem where students only focus on content at first and their mindset is I need to get through the content before I can get to the practice test, is that they way underestimate the amount of time that it takes to get through the content. And so they're just focused on content. And then they look up and their test is in 2 weeks and they haven't done a full length yet.
Yeah. And they've spent like 8 months like reading a book, right? Like that is not rare.
Yeah.
That's a pretty common like path.
Yep.
Cause once again, that's how it works in undergrad, you know, like for your physics exam, you like study hardcore, you're not doing any like big practice exams or anything like that. And then like 2 weeks before, maybe you like take a practice exam.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work for the MCAT, because the other side is just like the way that you think. There's a lot of times you can, like, I like call it like a backdoor. You can backdoor your way into the answer by paying attention to the units. Right. Mm. Or something. I don't know why the AAMC does this, but they'll ask like how many chiral centers are in this molecule, and then they'll leave the dashes and the wedges. And like the only reason you do a dash or a wedge is if it's a chiral molecule. And so like you count it and you're like, oh, here's seven dashes and three wedges. So that's 10. Right. I can do math. And so like it's so much easier. But like if you don't know and you're not like looking for those patterns and like the way that they're trying to get you to think and the way to like look through stuff, then you're going to miss that. Another kind of like thing in that like general idea there is data interpretation. Mm. There is such a high level of data interpretation on the MCAT, especially in the bio section, but even in the chemistry and the psych-social section as well, where you're seeing like studies and like it's just this avalanche of jargon coming down on you. And it's very easy to be overwhelmed because most biology majors haven't seen that kind of stuff. I know I graduated with a biology degree and I hadn't read like 100 studies. I hadn't read probably 3 studies. I probably should have read more, but it was less than like required for any of my courses.
Yep.
And so as a result, like a lot of times people like get to the exam, maybe you know kidneys in and out, but you don't know how to deal with this passage, right? And there's a lot of like multiple variables going on here and knockouts and knockdowns and pull downs and things that you're just like, I don't know what's going on with any of this. And so if you're just doing content, you're missing some of that. Yeah. You also need to work on like stamina and endurance and just like timing and fatigue. The first time any student takes an exam, I guarantee you are going to be exhausted by the end of it, right? Like you are burnt, you're fried.
Yeah.
It's like somebody who like runs 5 miles for the first time after like not running at all. But if you run 5 miles like every day for like, you know, months and months, like 6 months from now, you'll run 5 miles. I'm like, yeah, let's go for a walk after this. You know, my friend wants to go for a walk. Let's do that. Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, they want to play tennis. Let's go play tennis or baseball. Right. Stick with the baseball stuff. And so later on, you're going to find it a lot easier. But generally, I find the first exams that people take, their biology and psych scores especially, are a little bit lower than maybe it should be, just because, you know, you're 6 hours into this exam, you have an hour and a half left, like you're done, right? You're mm-hmm. you're a cooked noodle at that point. And so working on that is also something that you want to kind of like work in these practice exams.
Okay. Lots of stuff to do there. So
yeah,
let's actually work through the nuts and bolts of this. So let's say I have 4 months to study, right? That's a very common number that students will come mm-hmm. with. What should the first thing a student, what should be the first thing a student does when they go, okay, I'm sitting down at my computer, I have 4 months until I take the test, go. Like what do I need to do first, second, third, fourth?
All right. So I have like a self-serving answer here. First off, NextStep has a free study planner tool. So every student should do that and take a whack at that if, you know, it's free. Like okay. just download it, go to the NextStep homepage, and you'll be able to do that.
Okay.
But like outside of that, like what that does is it just kind of like builds your schedule there. So first off, like get your calendar. If there are days that you need to take off, cross those off, mm-hmm. right? Like if you're getting married on a weekend, right? Like don't plan on studying that weekend, right? Like you got stuff that's going on there. If you got finals, right? Like I'm going to need a couple of days minimum to like prep for my finals. And like, I have a big paper due here. I know I'm going to be cramming the day before. I'm like, mm-hmm. you know, like trying to like get this paper out because I'm going to be procrastinating. I'm planning on procrastinating. I'm so good at it. But these, like, you want to kind of like build out your schedule there and then kind of, you know, look at that, like, you know, 25% of the way through there, that's about when you should be taking your first exam. So if we're talking 4 months, about 1 month, then you should be taking an exam. And then another one, maybe another month into that. And then after that, like, you know, 2 weeks. And then every week after that, you'll be kind of like working in an exam, which means that you want to try to get through most of that content in that first, let's say, 8 weeks, which is when you hit that second exam going through there. So the first exam you take, you're only going to be through about half of the content.
Okay.
And so now start to kind of like think about this and working through the content. You know, I would say get the AAMC outline, get a set of books. I'm biased for NextStep, but like some set of books, you need something, you need some content there.
Yeah.
And start to kind of like plan ahead and like lay it out like, okay, I need to do how many chapters a week do I need to do in order to hit that deadline kind of like in, you know, 1 month and in 2 months. Mm-hmm. Don't want to be halfway done here and completely done here.
Do you have any rules of thumb for how long it takes someone to read a chapter, read a book, like any general rules of thumb that somebody should be basing their initial estimates off and then hopefully can adjust as they go?
I wish I did. The thing here is like, it's going to be very different for different students. If you have a physics degree, you are going to get through physics much faster than somebody who is, you know, has left like undergrad 10 years ago and is now working as a nurse and like, oh, I need to look up what's going on with physics. Mm-hmm. And so understand, and like, you want to have a little bit of flexibility in there and like, you know, be able to adjust, maybe plan for 1 day a week to just like catch up on the mm-hmm. stuff that you've done before. I will say generally, beginning to end, it takes about like 300, 350 hours is like a good like set for how long to expect to have to spend to like really knock the MCAT out of the park.
Content wise only, or is that including reviewing total, practice tests, right, all that stuff?
Yeah, like total. Okay. And so that means like, you know, if you've got 10 weeks, you need to work 35 hours a week,
yeah,
right? And like that's a lot, right?
That's
like
a lot.
Yeah,
that's a full-time job.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why, you know, 10 weeks, I mean, that's still like 2.5 months. Mm-hmm. So if you like expand that out a little bit, you know, maybe you need to work like 22 hours a week. And so just kind of like planning for this, just kind of working through. Another thing I will really strongly advocate for, do not try to, I know it feels really good to be like, I'm going to hit physics this week and then I'm going to be done with physics and I'm going to cross that off the list. And then I'm going to do bio and I'm going to knock bio off the list. It feels really good to knock things off of a list and cross them out. But if you do that, let's say you do physics first and then you do chemistry and bio and then orgo and then psych and then sociology and then biochem, all of a sudden it's been 2 months since you've looked at physics and that's not good.
Yeah.
So you want to do kind of like a grab bag. So like this week you're doing physics on Monday, chemistry on Tuesday, bio and biochem on Wednesday, psych soc on Thursday, Friday you're trying to catch up on whatever it is that you weren't able to get done earlier in the week. Or maybe Saturday because you want to go out on Friday night, but you're going to work Saturday morning.
Okay.
And so think about this, like what realistically you're able to put in. And I think that that should also affect, you know, we started with the 4 month thing. Mm-hmm. And like now we're trying to like fill that up. And that's a really common thing, but also recognize like what's going on with you. If you don't have enough time to put in like 25, 30 hours a week, then maybe you need like, you know, 4 months. You know, if you feel like, oh, I'm going to be working hard, like 40 hours a week on this. First off, I'm not saying nobody does that, but like I have a lot more students that say they're going to do that than actually do that.
Yeah.
And so be realistic. And just kind of like think about this of like actual like hard study time. And so after that, you kind of like work through, like you're hitting like each of the topics going through as you're like studying through, let's say you like studied like acids and bases and titrations. After you finish studying that, do practice questions on it. You know, try to get into the mindset of like, how am I going to be asked on this? How am I going to apply it? Chemistry and physics, you want to do a lot of practice questions because I think the battle in chemistry and physics is knowing when to use what equation. It's not knowing the equations. The problem is like you see a question on the MCAT and you're like, what am I supposed to do with this? Mm-hmm. And so you need to do a lot of application. You need to do a lot of practice questions because that helps you figure out when, like when I see this question, what equation am I supposed to use? I'm like, oh, I've seen something kind of like this before. And so I know what to do in that scenario.
Okay. So 350 hours roughly.
Yeah.
Right. I'll round up. Let's say 400 hours, right? That's what it's going to take. I love the hour breakdown because it's so much easier and manipulatable than 4 months, right? 4 months for most people is like, oh my God, that's a long time. And they go, oh, I have lots of time, right? I have lots of time to do it. But then when you actually go, okay, 450 or 400 hours, let's say I have 4 months, that's 100 hours a month, right? And there's 4.3 weeks per month, and then you divide, right? And you're just dividing and dividing and dividing, and you're actually looking at, okay, the weekends I'm working, but during the week I have time, I have X number of hours per day. Is my math even realistic or do, right? Right off the bat, you should know if your math works or doesn't work to get to where you ultimately want to take the MCAT. And you may from day one go, I think I'm probably going to have to push back my MCAT, right?
Yeah.
Would you recommend potentially someone getting to that point and going, wait, the math doesn't work? I'll just make it work, right? I'll just 1, 2, skip a few here, there, everywhere. Or would you recommend if someone is looking at that math going, well, wait a minute, I have 4 months, 400 hours. I have X number of hours per day that I can realistically do this, right? And taking time off to rest my brain and have some fun still and do shadowing and clinical experience and making sure you're doing well in your courses and working and whatever you're doing, right? If someone is at that point and goes, wait a minute, that math doesn't work, do you recommend they rework? Like, I'm just going to work longer hours and sleep less, or do you push back the test right away?
I think it depends also on the time frame. Like, if you're planning on taking the tests in March, like, you have some wiggle room to push back a couple of months and still be early in your application when summer hits. However, if you are dead set on getting your application in this year and you've got 3 months and then, like, to take your exam and that end of the 3 months is, like, the last date in July, like, you can't really push back too much farther than that. I mean, you can push back to August or September and, like, you can get in that way, but it's a lot harder. And so just kind of balancing that. Like, if you're already planning on taking it back in September and you want to push back a month, like, that's technically losing, like, a whole year because there isn't an option to push back a month at that point.
Yeah.
So trying to work all of that out and kind of, like, think about those things, there's definitely something with that. You want to kind of, like, think about your schedule. And you can also, like, plan ahead a little bit too. Like, it doesn't have to be a straight linear thing. You know, the way we've been talking about, like, the 4 months thing, let's round that to 400 hours. That's 100 hours a month. That means about 25 hours a week, right? You don't necessarily have to do it like that. You could do, like, I'm doing 15 hours a week for these couple of months, and then after school ends, I'm putting in like 30, 35 hours a week in this area here. And so knowing your own schedule and knowing how to like make that work is also big. You definitely have to plan ahead, which is, you know, some people's not their strongest suit. I'll admit it's something I struggled with. And it's why I felt like I needed a course when I first prepped for the MCAT, because I needed a little bit of structure because I wasn't going to be able to self-study. Mm. And so knowing yourself a little bit there, some of that self-reflection of like, I need a little bit more structure. It's useful. But developing that study plan and like sitting down and working through all of it, that makes it a lot more achievable because you can look and say like, okay, tomorrow I have to read the physics chapter, this physics chapter intro about like acceleration and velocities and forces and things like that, just the like straight Newtonian stuff. And that's what I have to do tomorrow. And then the day after that, I need to read about, you know, what's going on inside of a cell, the mitochondria, like the different parts of within the cell and like the structures of this biological molecules, like DNA and amino acids and lipids and that sort of stuff. Makes it a lot easier if you're like, oh, this is just what I have to do today. If you don't plan ahead, what happens is you just have this giant mountain and you don't know where to start. And so you keep pushing it off. And so all of a sudden a month has gone by and you actually haven't accomplished anything because it's just insurmountable.
Yeah. So study plan, working those hours, trying to build out this calendar, looking at practice tests, right? Now the AAMC offers the 4 scored exams, the 1 unscored. Obviously, Next Step has lots of exams that are highly rated among students. The student listening to this going, well, how many practice tests should I work into my schedule? When should I start them? Or better yet, right, trying to work backwards is, when should I plan on finishing my exam? Should I take one the day before my real test? Should I take one 2 weeks before? Where should I end up? And how does a student figure out that sort of spacing, right? They see all of the books in front of them and breaking those down, but then adding in the practice tests and the review of the practice tests, how should students be doing that?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I have students all the time that are like, I'm going on spring break. I'm going to take 5 exams. And I'm like, nope, that's a mistake, right? Don't do that. You want to take about 1 exam a week is generally what I advise for people. No more than like once every 5 days. That's like a really insane pace. But once you get to that like last month, right, I really love that we have these 4 scored tests because those are the like each of the Saturdays before your actual exam, you're sitting down and taking an AAMC exam. And that's like your last month is the month of the AAMC exams.
Abraham Lincoln likes the total number of tests.
Right.
4 scored.
Yeah, 4 scored and 1 unscored sample. That's funny. So the idea here is you take an exam, you use this exam as a diagnostic. You know, I said that we're not done with content once we get to the end. The reason we're not done with content when we get to that like tail end is you take an exam, you review the exam, you figure out what you missed and why and kind of like what goes through there. And you're going to have a list of like, I need to look over electrochemistry, I need to work on my timing in cars, and I need to work on data interpretation in biology.
And amino acids. Everyone has to work on amino acids.
Amino acids. Yeah, everyone know your amino acids. And so, and that's what you're going to work on for the next like 3 or 4 days. And so you take the exam, you review it for a day or two, you hit your weak areas, and then you take another exam. And that's about a week. It's about a week between exams. And that way you're actually improving between each exam. And that's really crucial.
Yeah.
I think if there's anything that students just generally don't do enough, it's review.
Yeah.
And so I've been doing a lot of stuff with students actually recently, because I have a lot of students taking the exam coming up here shortly. So I have some on 314. I'm excited. It's Pi Day. So that'll be a good one.
Yeah.
But
well, think about it, right? I keep talking about sports, but I think this will resonate with students because the MCAT and test taking is very different, right? Again, looking at undergrad students are going and they're taking a test. They really most of the time don't have the ability to review what they got right or wrong. They just get a score back and they go, oh, I missed that one question. Oh, well, I'm going to move on. But with practice tests, that ability to review and improve, if you think about it from a sports perspective, right, one of the most important things that an NFL team does after a football game is they go back and watch the tape. right? Mm-hmm. They don't just play every Sunday and then that's it. And go, oh, we lost again. I won. I don't know what we're doing wrong, but if we go out and play more, we'll probably mm-hmm. do better. So let's just go play another game faster. But no, they're watching film, right? They're watching the tape. They're reviewing every single play, every single step, every single call, going, what did we do wrong here? What did we do right here? What can we do better next time? And right, if it works for the Kansas City Chiefs like it did this year, for winning the Super Bowl, why won't it work for you? Right, that's the whole point of doing these reviews, is to make sure you're not repeating the same mistakes and make sure you are repeating what you're doing right.
That's really insightful. That's just something that, like, I don't know why students don't review well enough. And you're absolutely right. It's because that's not something you do in undergrad. Like, you take your exam, you get your score back, and then there's no point in reviewing and tweaking at that point. And so, yeah, that's exactly why. It's a learned skill there. But with this, you need to. And not, like, I had one of my students that, you know, recently just knocked the MCAT out of the park. The way he was reviewing, it was like really great, because he wasn't just reviewing what the correct answer was, but he was writing out, like, this was my thought process for this question. This is what the AAMC, how my thought process was supposed to be for the explanation that they gave. And so, like, as he was going through here, he wasn't just reviewing, like, whether or not he got a question correct, because there were a lot of questions he's like, well, I knew this, and so I just thought B was the right answer. And, like, that was not the thought process the AAMC wanted him to be going through.
Yeah.
And so you want to not just review, like, what is the correct answer? What's the incorrect answer? Did I get it right or not? But, like, how should I be thinking?
Yeah.
And so this, like, highly self-reflective kind of, like, understanding yourself as a way to understand how to deal with the test. Yeah.
I thought the AAMC explanation was A is the right answer because it's the right answer.
Well, yeah, most of them. Some of them are a little bit better.
A little better.
Yeah.
All right, good. Okay. So building in that review, really, again, starting off early with that diagnostic, which obviously Next Step has the free diagnostic and the free first test for students to check out as well. At what point does a student just hit the bail button and go, things aren't going the way I want them to, whether because they're sticking to their plan and they're not improving, or life unfortunately gets in the way and something happens, right? Their car breaks down and all of a sudden their commute to work is much longer because now they have to take public transportation, or mom or dad gets sick, grandparents die, whatever happens, right? Life happens, unfortunately. I hear these horror stories every year about what happens with students and their kind of trajectory. Mm-hmm. When do they hit that button to say, I'm gonna press pause. There's no point in gritting my teeth and fighting through this. I'm just gonna reset myself either next month or next year.
So there's a couple differences in there. Also, if you have to take public transit and that's your problem, just listen to the podcast and you're going to be great, right? That's the solution to that problem. But, you know, you kind of talked about, like, scores not improving, and that's kind of one thing versus, like, life happening. And I think that that's a little bit different. I think a lot of times I don't see student scores improve on that first exam, which is scary for students because they're hitting content and then they take that first exam and they're like a quarter of the way through their prep. And, like, their score, like, barely budged, maybe. And I think that that's, like, terrifying, right? Because mm-hmm. you want your score to be, like, increased by, like, 25% minimum towards whatever you're trying to get to. But a lot of this is, like, you know, the application side of things. You do need this, like, fundamental foundation in order to, like, apply stuff to these, like, you know, these, like, passages and that sort of thing. So very often I actually don't see a big score increase on the first exam. A lot of that first full-length exam that they're doing is figuring out timing and endurance and stamina and all of that stuff and data interpretation. And it's going to be a struggle, mm-hmm. but that's just how it is. So if that's the issue, don't panic on that one. Just kind of, like, stick with the process. Most of the time, the major growth I see is in this, like, last little bit, but you have to prepare the foundations for that by, like, getting through the content. Okay. So that's one side of things. If on the other hand, we're talking, like, life happens, right? Like, you know, unfortunately, like, your father passes away unexpectedly or something like that. I mean, that's actually, like, an issue I've had to deal with a student recently. And, like, that throws a major wrench into, like, kind of, like, what's going on in your life. And it's really hard to, you know, stay focused on the MCAT. Like maybe it's actually like you should be taking a little bit of time there. Mm-hmm. And so being realistic and understanding that is important as well. It's not the end of the world if you push back a year, right? If you absolutely need to because of issues going on with your health or like family members or, you know, losing your job and living on the streets, like, okay, well, you know, kind of like get together, like all yeah. your stuff and like make it so that you can like survive.
Yeah. Be safe, survive. Like,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Don't decide like, oh, I'm just going to, you know, I can study or have a job in this like time that I'm living right now. So I have to study. So I'm going to go live under this bridge
yeah.
in Chicago over winter. Like probably not a good idea. Mm-hmm. And so I, obviously that's an extreme scenario there, but just like understanding, like there is, you know, you got to kind of take care of yourself mm-hmm. as well. And don't get to the point where, you know, everything just kind of implodes. Sort of the great things about MCAT students, people who want to be doctors, they are ambitious, mm-hmm. right? And that is good. And that's why I love my job is because I get to interact with intelligent, curious, ambitious people all the time. And those are the people that like do stuff and like are great and awesome. But on the other hand, there are times when people will sometimes be a little bit too ambitious. And like, you know, they think that through sheer force of will, you can force something to happen. And sometimes you like it takes time. It yeah. takes like the process does take time. It takes effort. You can't through sheer force of will prepare for the MCAT in 40 hours. Right. Like if that's all the time you have, then you probably do need to kind of like push back a little bit, mm-hmm. be a little bit more realistic with the overall schedule.
Yeah. Okay. And part of that is a lack of understanding those who do push through and then ultimately typically end up with a bad score, yet still mm-hmm. continue to push through and then ultimately end up with a rejection is now all of a sudden I have to double all of my costs because I'm applying to medical school twice. I'm going to retake the MCAT and take the time to repair that. And now I have to write another personal statement, a different personal statement, and continue to improve my extracurriculars because the medical schools are going to want to see improvement. And so it's this whole just cascade of pain and suffering from just wanting to grin and bear it and just push through when the smart thing to do, the better judgment thing to do is to press pause.
Yeah. Exactly. Because it does just like double the pain, double the pressure at a minimum, if not even more, when you like feel like, oh, I'm in this horrible scenario and just like makes it a lot more difficult down the line.
Yeah. Oh, all right. So a student has, they're sitting down, they have their calendar, they are marking off all of their hours, they're working in their full length exams. What, as kind of a wrap up here for the student to really understand where they're at, one of the fun things that I like to say is that I believe in miracles, but not when it comes to your MCAT, right? and students will go into their real MCAT exam with the thought of having a 10-point increase above and beyond anything that they've ever scored on their full-length exams. Where should a student be scoring with their full-length exams, knowing that, number one, the Next Step, AAMC, all of these practice exams are never going to be your exact score, right? Because number one, the test that you're going to take is going to be completely different than anything you've seen before. And number two, real test anxiety, right? Of knowing that you're walking into the real thing versus a practice thing is going to completely change your physiology and you may freak out. And that's okay. That happens. I have a good podcast about test anxiety. It's premedyears.com/337. What should a student be shooting for to be encouraged to know, okay, my practice tests are where I want them to be for where I want my real test to be?
So in theory, we're hoping for stability in that area already. You know, on all of your practice exams,
I say stability, meaning if I want a 510, then I'm like 509, 511, 509, 510.
Yeah. Somewhere in there. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
For like at least a couple of exams.
Okay.
I will say a lot of times I actually see, you know, I say like take an exam every week leading up to that last exam. There's a lot of times in the week before the actual exam, a student score will drop. And that is like the worst time for their ego, for their score to be dropping, right? Like the week before the actual exam. And a lot of times that just comes down to pressure. Students tend to put to work harder and put in more work and time and effort. So there's a decent chance that like that 2 weeks before the exam, you're putting in 70 hours that week. There's a lot of students that are going to do that. They're going to be like exhausted and burnt out. Yeah. And when they get to the exam, especially the bio and CARS section, which is a lot of like critical thinking, reasoning stuff, they're just foggy and they're just like not in the best frame of mind, which is also why the week of the actual test, mm-hmm. like the 2 or 3 days before the test should be the easiest days of your entire prep like path.
Easiest in terms of making sure that the student literally schedules the easiest, like
the easiest days. Yeah. They're like, do the least.
Okay.
It's like prepping to run a marathon, right? Yep. If you prep like for 6 months to run a marathon, the day before the marathon, you are not running 20 miles. Right. Like, you're taking that day off and maybe the day off before that. And then like just trying to make sure that you are in the best shape on the day that it actually matters. Yeah. The same thing for the MCAT. The 2 days before the exam are days that you should be taking relatively off. I say relatively because I know medical students well enough to know that like nobody is going to be able to like, I'm just not doing anything. I think that that's a good idea. But like if you have to do something, do stuff that's like low difficulty, like just reviewing like vocab, reviewing your equations, things like that, like minor things. Don't do like, I'm going to do a full exam. It's like a bad idea. So generally you want to have been in that score range. Like if you're shooting for a 510, exactly like 509, 511, maybe the week before the exam, it went down to a 508. Like, I don't think that's that's not going to say like call off the exam to me. Yeah. That's going to say like, you know, relax. But also goes to, as you're taking your actual exams, all of them, emulate test day as much as possible. Do not like do the exams at home in your pajamas, sitting on your bed with a laptop and like Netflix playing in the background and that sort of thing. Like go to the library, sit there, like take your breaks how you're supposed to. Don't split it up over multiple days unless you are actually splitting up the actual exam over multiple days if you have like a timing allowance.
Yep.
But emulate test day as much as possible. Cause you're right that like physiology does change, you know, that fight or flight stuff kicks in. You have state-based memory issues with like what's going on inside your head can cause you to forget and like panic and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's why you want to make sure that you're in a good frame of mind. I was actually just talking about that state-based memory effects. I don't know if you had any siblings, but I remember specific times when I was playing Monopoly with my brothers and I was so angry that I forgot words, like regular words, like their names. And like, I'm just like, I'm so angry. Right.
Yeah.
And like panic and anger and like really strong emotions can cause like issues with memory overall, where you like, I forgot my brother's names because I was so angry to land on Park Place for the fifth time in a row. Right. But I'm like, I only passed go twice. How did I land on this five times?
Rent is so expensive here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Wow. So lots of fun stuff with that discussion about study plans. In fact, I think I'm going to put this out, if you're listening to this on the pre-mid years, I'm gonna put this out on the pre-mid years channel too, because I think it's such an important topic that we need to expose students to it.
I'd like to once again just kind of point out that we have a free study planner tool. You put in what days you need off, you put in when your test is, it'll spit out a plan based on how many hours you tell it you have a week. If you only have 10 hours a week, you're going to get a different plan than if you have, you know, 40 hours a week. Mm. Making sure that you hit the highest yield stuff you can in that time frame. If you've got more time, we're going to go over more material, but if you got less time, it'll be less material. Yeah. Plugging in the exams and readings and everything else. So take advantage of that.
All right, so there you have it. Hopefully that was helpful for you to really understand the first steps really in building a study plan, the first steps in what it takes to think about making a study plan for the MCAT, and really the first steps in that process. Whether you make a study plan or not, really the first thought process behind what it's going to take the MCAT and prepare to take the MCAT. So hopefully that was helpful. Again, if you want some more information, go to nextsteptestprep.com. You can even give them a call at 866-295-6586 if you want some more personalized attention from them for your MCAT test prep needs. Again, their phone number, 866-295-6586. Let them know you heard about them here on the podcast, and they'll hook you up with hopefully some deals going on. Hope you have a great week. We'll see you next time here on the MCAT podcast.
This is MedEd Media.